This episode of the CMO Suite is brought to you by Connectivity Strategies, specializing in micro-targeted full-funnel media strategies for clients like WWE, Corona, First Watch, Coke, and more. Connectivity Strategy, national strength, localized approach. Visit them at connectivitystrategy.com. And as always, I like to throw a nice shout-out to my friends over at Tumi. Product quality and selection are key attributes that have made Tumi the leading international business accessory and travel lifestyle brand. Simply put, there's no other product made like Tumi. And finally, No Kid Hungry. We are also always very proud that we make a contribution in the name of each of our 2019 guests to No Kid Hungry. Your tax-deductible donation will help us provide vulnerable kids in America with nutritious meals so they can focus on being kids, not being hungry. For more information, visit No Kid Hungry at nokidhungry.org. Holly, let's start the show.
You're in the CMO Suite, the podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
Hello and welcome to the CMO Suite. I'm your host, Sean Halter, and co-hosting with me today and producing is my great friend, Holly Payberg. Holly, thanks for joining me.
Sure.
Listen, she's almost, am I allowed to even say that you're so pretty that we keep you off camera?
Oh, shut it.
I don't even know if you're allowed to say that anymore. Listen, we're super excited about the guest that we have with us today, Scott Griffiths, CFO and marketing for Farmers Insurance. Am I correct?
Yes, that's right.
I got the title right.
It is. It's an unusual one. We're a rare breed out there.
You are a rare breed, but it's interesting. And I think that's one of the things that we thought would be really interesting about potentially having you on the show is the fact that you don't see that often. Obviously, plenty of CMOs that are out there, and we love to have CMOs on the show. We love to have global, you know, marketing directors and VPs of marketing, but you don't see CFO and marketing in a title, I feel like, maybe nearly as often as you should.
Yeah, it's unusual, and I think it's a growing trend whether the word CFO is in there, but I think for two reasons. One, people are spending more and more on marketing and have more and more options, and also that we have more data now. And so a lot of CMOs or even CEOs want some sort of governance and due diligence over the marketing spend, and that's where someone with, you know, numbers background comes in and can actually look objectively at all the marketing activities and apply some science to the art.
Well, and it seems like, and again, I want to make sure we get a chance to talk about your history and how you got into the position to some extent. And clearly, I can tell by your accent that you grew up in Brooklyn or Jersey. Am I right?
It is. I just fake it to sound slightly more intelligent.
You know, the ladies love it when we throw something out. I think I used this one time when I was talking to Holly. Where did you grow up, Scott?
I grew up in England, in Nottingham, famous for Robin yes. Hood and nothing much else.
And that's and the accent still sticks.
It depends on who you ask.
Yeah.
Over here, I've had every accent thrown at me. It's like, oh, you're South African, Scottish, every English-speaking one. And then right. I go back, it's like, oh, dude, you sound like a Yank now. So I'm somewhere over the Atlantic. I've been over here 17 years now, so I don't know where I belong.
When you go home, does it pick back up more than you come back? Or
It does.
A little bit of both.
Whenever I'm on the phone to my dad or any of my family over there, it quickly comes back.
Well, listen, again, thank you for coming our way. We know it's tricky. We decided to do this season as often as we could remotely. We felt like where we had the chance to be able to have people in studio, normally we produce at iHeart, and a huge thank you to them for always hosting us whenever possible. But there's always something that's a little bit different when you can actually sit in a room and talk with somebody to some extent, right? You're able to create not only a more personal connection, but you're able to kind of typically, I feel like pull a little bit more out of the equation a little bit as well. So did you start, I'm assuming from the title, that you started on the financial side of things before marketing became somewhat of an interest to you?
Yeah, absolutely. So grew up in the UK, went to school there. I went to my career advisor. I was good at numbers, so I advised you to get a career in numbers. Accounting was the way to go. So did that in the UK, came over here, did something similar, joined a company called Countrywide, which was the largest U.S. mortgage lender at the time, and played a large part in the financial crisis.
Yeah, I remember that.
And if you've ever seen the movie The Big Short, it really feels like a documentary to me versus a...
Did you see somebody in the movie that you're like, oh my God, that's me? In the background, anywhere there.
I'm not going to confess to any of that.
Fair enough, Scott, fair enough.
Being an immigrant, I can be deported at any point in time.
Not in this administration. Let's leave politics out of this. So you ended up at Countrywide for a little while.
I did. And after the financial crisis, looking for something a little different, ended up at Farmers Insurance. We're in 36 states, $20 billion company, very, very stable, been around 90 years this year. And 6 years ago, that we hired a new CMO, and he wanted two people. He wanted a CFO and a customer research and analytics person. So everything that we did was driven by by data versus people's pet projects. I think what you find in marketing, and it's the rest of the world, people come with biases as to what they believe.
Of course.
Works, doesn't work. You know, I could tell you that half of the people will think TV is dead, nobody watches it anymore, and the other half of people think that's still the way to go. That's still how you reach the masses. And I'm there to kind of...
find the balance in between.
Find the balance and make sure people aren't overtook with the
shiny penny
project.
Of it all.
Yeah, the shiny penny and their preconceived notions of, because what worked yesterday may well not work today.
Well, and it almost feels like, and I was talking to somebody else about this earlier today, I think it was Dale Lawrence from Variety, it's almost as if the marketing funnel has really been turned almost completely upside down. You know, it used to be that you were looking for somebody, again, who might have some great understanding of how to build brand awareness. And if they understood search or finances or anything else, you know, that was like almost an extra. And now it's almost completely the other way. Everything starts with finance to some extent as to how are we going to fund this and how are we going to be able to show a true attribution for the dollars that we're spending. And maybe it's just that the math is caught up with that to some extent, do you feel like?
Potentially, although, you know, when I started on day one, the first thing is, yeah, I'm going to do that. I'm going to get everything down to a return, and we're just going to invest all the money with the most return. Two things quickly became apparent.
Yeah.
One, everything interacts with each other. That point, there's no...
It's hard to show true attribution, yeah.
Right now. Yeah. And secondly... most of the things we do, particularly, and most marketers, I can't give you a list of customers that we got because of a TV ad or at the Farmers Insurance Open.
Is it always in San Diego?
It is every year. It's the first PGA.
So beautiful. Why didn't we interview you there, for crying out loud? That's so beautiful there. But your point is a fair one, and I guess it's an interesting point. So again, especially coming from somebody with a finance background, it's so hard. It's so hard for CMOs or VPs of marketing or whatever to be able to show all of that attribution. How do you count the open and that ROI? And so from your side, how do you count that? Or from your perspective, how are you trying to find that balance between measurement and knowing the brand is still very important?
Absolutely, and everything kind of has to do double duty now. There's not such a thing as something that just does brand or just does purchase intent or just gets you a sale. So we start off firstly without the numbers, right? So we're outgunned in the market. So give you one stat. The average American will see 30 insurance ads in a week. Only one of those is for Farmers. The other 29 are competitors. So we have to be really targeted. So the first question we ask is this getting the right message to our right customer? And so that's the first thing we do with Farmers Insurance Open. I won't bore you with the details, but it does. You know, it resonates with our customers. Not the customers of our competitors, but ours. Then it's, okay, well, what's it supposed to do for us? And then what's the way of measuring that? And the fact is, you know, a golf event is supposed to raise awareness and purchase intent amongst golf fans. If you don't care about golf, you're not going to care if we sponsor a golf event. How do we measure that? Well, you can do viewership and impressions, all that stuff. But it's really just going out there and asking golf fans, hey, who sponsors that event down in San Diego? And does it matter to you? So it's more...
Well, the does it matter to you is a good question. Not to stop you mid-conversation... But I think, again, what we try to get from any of these opportunities for anybody who's kind enough to come and sit in on a show with us is, are there a couple nuggets that somebody can take away from that? Is there something that a CMO who maybe doesn't work for an insurance group but works for somebody else, what can they take away from this conversation? And that last point that you made should get a button on it, which is not just, did you hear about us, but do you care?
Sure.
You know? And so... what do you feel like you hear when you guys ask that question? And does that make it from that level down all the way up to those of you that are up in this higher part of the marketing decisioning process?
Yeah, you always think you know what people should take away, but what they take away is something largely very different. So, you know, we'll go down and ask people who sponsors the event. You're standing right next to a Farmers Insurance sign saying Farmers Insurance Open, but they don't make that connection. We need to reach out and actually engage with. People are very blind now to just signs. You know, you're bombarded with them on the internet now. You need to give them a reason to actually care. And insurance is not, it's a low engagement category. Nobody jumps up in the morning and go, great, my insurance policy's up for renewal. I run down.
I can't wait.
And so it's really, that's a challenge we're facing right now. In terms of raising awareness is great. giving people a reason to actually, one, care about insurance, but two, care about farmers insurance.
And so you talked a little bit about the team, CMO at the top. Who's the current CMO for farmers?
It's a guy called Mike Linton, who's been a breath of fresh air. I mean, was the first CMO at Best Buy and the first CMO at eBay. And again, the first thing he wanted to do was, okay, put all of your biases, all of your preconceived notions
aside. Let's figure this out.
Let's actually ask customers, look at the marketplace and make decisions based on that versus our own. You know, we had an airship, for example, that was just didn't make marketing sense. If one advice to take this or leave it, don't get an airship. It's not the best way to do marketing.
What was the airship?
It was airship. It flew around.
Okay. So it was like a blimp, like the Goodyear blimp, but you had one of those.
Oh, yeah. I learned that an airship and a blimp are very different.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yes.
What's the difference?
The spelling, I think. No, there's something about its construction, but if you went to
Holly,
the airship,
do you know the difference?
I did not.
You do not. Okay. So, but to your point, you had to kind of get in. And look, whoever decided that the airship was the right thing at the right time, maybe that was the best decision they could make because they didn't have the understanding of really how to navigate it through the world today. So you've got this CMO who's come in there and he's kind of said, let's mix things up. Brings a CFO, in essence, from your perspective, and was the thought process to not only allow you to be the CFO for the group, but also to create that dual marketing role for you to just appoint? Is there also another CFO that does just the financial piece, and you're kind of in between these two spots?
Oh, yeah. I report directly to the chief marketing officer, so I'm focused on marketing, but coming from a finance background.
That's such a crazy... Do you see more of yous out there? That seems like such an interesting title.
Well, I think it depends on the organization. I mean, we spend hundreds of million dollars on marketing, so it actually warrants some sort of financial due diligence. Some places can't afford that, but they should be somebody...
responsible
with that skill
for that.
Because marketers run wild sometimes.
So came from the finance background, and then not to make you go backwards to some extent, what was the marketing part? How did you navigate into that space a little bit, and what do you love about it?
Yeah, so I'm the first and so far only CFO of marketing at Farmers Insurance. It's a brand new position. They were looking for someone with the finance background, but with that kind of strategic mindset. A lot of finance folks can't necessarily take a step back and look at the business and look at it strategically. Because the first thing we ever do is, and the first thing we did and paid money for was to segment the market and really understand the insurance customer and then figured out where that intersection of their needs, wants, and expectations interacted with our value proposition. And as soon as you get that target customer, a lot of the decisions become really easy. Some things that just don't make sense, then we're not talking to them in the right way.
So hit on that. When you feel like when you're saying we're not talking to them in the right way, what were maybe some of the ways that you were talking with them and that you've made that adjustment from that dynamic standpoint?
Sure. I mean, it's clear to see there's some competitors out there that focus on price. You know,
what's the easiest denominator when you don't know what else to talk about?
Yeah. And it's easy.
We're cheap.
I think, you mentioned that the funnel and the aggregators out there that I can get prices for, whether it's flights, hotels, all that very few people can compete on price anymore. And so now they're going towards customer service, and we need to give people a reason to see that Farmers provides that service. We've been around 90 years. We have 13,000 storefronts in 36 states. And you'll see our TV commercials and our whole campaigns are around, we call it We Know From Experience. You can trust us to look after your best needs.
And that's part of the value proposition. Obviously, whenever you're able to talk about value, that creates a willingness on our part to spend a little more.
Yeah. And so for us to spend any money targeting those people that want the cheapest price, they see insurance as something that they need to have, we're wasting our money because our message is...
It's not going to resonate, and that's maybe not your target audience anyway to some extent. There's others that will service that category.
Sure.
And then from your perspective, what's the role of content playing in how you guys maybe continue to evolve your messaging? It seems like, again, that's such a huge buzzword to some extent, but it does feel like this has become such a consumer, almost focus marketing funnel to some extent, where consumers really do get to make some of that decision process. So talk a little about how maybe content is factoring into and how you guys create engagement.
Yeah, I mean, it's... A lot of people want to interact with insurance companies to learn about insurance and for safety. But a lot of insurance customers, there's something that happens in their life that makes them concerned that they're covered. They may be buying their first house. They may have had their first child. And they engage with us at that point, not because they want to buy insurance, but they need to understand.
There's something that's happened in their life that obviously now it's become a need for awareness. Absolutely. Almost to some extent.
And so it's that kind of reaching out to people and showing our value proposition that you have a guy or a gal, you know, we call it a hand to hold and a throat to choke when things go wrong, which you won't get from those low value, the low price ones where you can call a call center and every single time you'll get somebody different.
A hand to hold.
And a throat to choke.
And what does that mean?
A hand to hold as to make sure that you feel comfortable and safe and that you feel covered in insurance. And you know what? If someone else goes wrong, you have this person's number. They're in a storefront. You can go see them versus some 1-800 number. Yeah. And, you know, it's...
So accountability.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so how is the insurance market itself? Again, it's something we all... both healthcare and insurance. It's something we all know we need, certainly at times in our lives. But it still feels sometimes, unless you're in the industry to some extent, that it's still this thing that kind of lives off in this other world unless you need it. And even then, it still probably feels like to some consumers, like, I know I need it. I remember Farmers. There's some other people that are in there. How do you navigate that space from your perspective and being able to increase awareness, show value, but try to make it as an engaging opportunity to talk to a consumer and not, you know, not scary?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. There's two ways to sell insurance. Yeah. One is kind of the heartstrings one, where you show somebody's house is destroyed. But that tends to get people to think about insurance, not necessarily your brand, versus actually putting the brand out there. So it's a challenge. And you know, companies face this in terms of a value proposition. If it's not price, what is it, when all you're really buying is a piece of paper and a promise, right?
Yeah.
That says, hey, if something goes wrong, we'll take care of you. And the only way you back up that promise is when something goes wrong, and by which time it's too late. And so, you know, the insurance industry spends about $6 billion a year trying to differentiate themselves. You know, and we're no different in terms of we have to get out there and say, hey, we're different than competitor A, competitor B, and this is the reason. Where we can't show pictures of the product and the cup holders and the... you know, the fancy gadgets we have, it is a promise, and we need to show that our promise is the best one to have.
How is regulation, or does regulation play any role in how you're able to market to consumers from a farmer's perspective? We know in the healthcare industry there's certain times where they're either allowed to advertise or what they are allowed to advertise. Mm-hmm. Does that dip into your side of the insurance industry to some extent?
Yeah, it makes it very different. So every state has a Department of Insurance that has its own rules and regulations, and we have to have disclosures and so on. But one of the ones that kind of drives us crazy, because people don't know it and they expect it, is we cannot give anyone a financial incentive to be a farmer's customer. So we can't give you...
No swag bag, no umbrella, no nothing.
We can't even say, hey, we can't say that we'll give you money, so we can't give you points, rebates, all of that kind of stuff. We have to say, file with every state in every state with the Department of Insurance to say, this is how we price, and we're not allowed to deviate it from that.
No farmer's insurance open tickets or anything?
Mm-mm, no, we can't even do that.
But if you're not a customer, you could provide tickets to somebody for that, I would think, right?
Yeah. Holly? Well, I don't know about that.
No? Okay, I'm just checking there, Scott. So... So that's interesting. And again, the regulation piece for other marketers that are out there, again, it's something for them to kind of always be thinking about to some extent. You've been there, did you say, for 3 years?
I've been with Farmers for 11 years.
11 years total.
CFO of marketing for six.
Okay, so for 6 years. And so as you're, and that's a long time, isn't it?
In the marketing world, yeah.
Yeah. As you're trying to figure your way through 2019 and really beyond, you've been there for a while, so you've been able to really grow roots. So it's not as if you're still figuring out who sits at what desk and what maybe does or doesn't work to some extent. What are the things, as you start to look ahead, that you feel like, I need to know more about this, or this is the next frontier for us, or how are we going to navigate this space? What do you feel like you're looking to next from a marketing perspective?
Yeah, I think it's continuing to learn more about our customers as they will change, because I can guarantee what worked in 2018 won't work in 2019. And we're constantly looking at new ways of engaging and reaching customers, whether that's, and I say new to our customers, whether it's social influencers to different sponsorships to different media channels of actually reaching people, and also how we speak to these people. There's a whole new generation now that for example, you have automatic car driving, self-driving cars, autonomous driving cars. You have this kind of rideshare mentality. You also have kind of Airbnb and those kind of things that people are caring less about the stuff that they have and more about the experiences they have. So how does insurance adapt to that person? Because people are owning cars less. They're owning homes less. So what does that mean for insurance?
That's such a weird dynamic in some ways to think about. And again, if you're catching this part the way in, we're in with Scott Griffiths, CFO and marketing for Farmers Insurance. We've been talking for a little bit now about obviously some of your background, some of your roots there. But the part that you just hit on there is so interesting, because no matter where you are in the marketing space or the media space, the industry is changing, and how you touch people is changing, whether that's, again, from a social engagement standpoint, to your point, or an influencer standpoint. But the thing that you just talked about was even more interesting, is not just that the marketing space is changing, but really the insurance space is changing dramatically to your point, which is people are, they're not owning the same things that they used to. And as an insurance company, if you're not adapting around that, you're going to be looking around 2 years from now going, what happened to all of our customers? And so how are you guys making that adaptation? Is the way that you're making that you're talking to people in the spaces that they're in, to your point, maybe social influencers and more of that kind of stuff? Or how are you adapting around that?
Yeah, I mean, we start with the customer and the environment and kind of work backwards from that. We did, as I mentioned, the first thing we did was segment the market and figure out our customers. We do that regularly, periodically, because things are changing. People's willingness to switch insurance companies, people, what they want from an insurance company, what they have to insure, where they're living. More people are living outside in the suburbs, and people are now working remotely, working at home, and all of these things. So we need to understand, the worst thing that we can do is assume that we know what the customer wants and needs. The only way we're going to know is to tell them, for them to tell us. And the only way we're going to know that is by asking them.
And so how do you find that kind of stuff out? Is it that you have just teams of people that are out there? Do you ever use outside vendors to help provide some of that kind of information for you? Or how are you guys knowing that information?
It is all of the above. We'll get studies that are kind of off the shelf, and then we'll customize it for insurance. And we'll have, every household in the U.S. will have a kind of a bead on where they stand in terms of us, Farmers Insurance, and our attraction to them. It's a constant refresh with outside vendors and, our own work and those kind of things too.
We've got a few minutes left here. And again, thank you for spending some time with us. I want to ask just a couple more questions if I can. One of which is, there's this big push to kind of bring everything in-house with a lot of brands. At least we feel like we see a lot of it from our perspective. And I feel like some of that is because there's so much uncertainty out there in the market, that you might have had an agency of record, and you might have had a digital agency of record or whatever that is for many years. And it seems like brands just feel like, to some extent, maybe they're not getting either the same level of transparency, or it's that the agency just doesn't know. I mean, we talked to a couple of CMOs that were like, well, look, we're bringing all the programmatic in-house, and it's because our agency just simply doesn't understand what it is. And so we're building that out. Is that a dynamic that's changed in the amount of time that you've been there? And if it has, is it the same from farmers' perspectives, or what's your own opinion on in-housing versus outsourcing?
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously benefits to bringing things in-house, but I think you lose a lot too. I think the environment is getting so complex now, and we're lucky enough that we have two great agencies, both a creative agency and a media agency, that we know and trust, and they know us better than most of the people that actually work at Farmers. They understand the brand, and they've been in charge of our campaign since 2010.
Who's your agency record?
For creative agency, it's RPA.
And do you say media as well?
Media is Zenith.
Yeah. So Zenith, big group. And so you feel like, again, because they've been able to build those roots for you guys, it's worked fantastically, because they're part of the team, really.
Sure. Yeah. No, absolutely. They're at the table for everything we do, and they've been fantastic.
And then how about outside of that? Again, are there other partners we were talking to? I feel like it was Charlie, who I talk about a lot because he was just such an interesting guest. sometimes something new is coming into the equation. And for them, for Charlie specifically, it was that their customer service piece, they felt like it wasn't, they weren't creating the opportunities to create engagement across all these different platforms. And so they just went out and they found some outside resources for just that, to be able to help them build that infrastructure. What are those things where you feel like you need infrastructure building going into either 2019 or 20?
Yeah, so there's things that, you know, and Zenith and RPA will openly admit that there's some things that they're not good at or they're not experienced at. We have an agency, for example, right down the road at FIO, the Farmers Insurance Open, that are helping us because they're experts at engaging in golf. When we started testing through social influencers, we went to an outside company that specialized in that to identify the influencers that work for insurance, which is kind of tricky. So where there's expertise that is lacking, we absolutely go out.
You look. And so as we take this last couple minutes, and again, I appreciate your coming out and joining us. It's always interesting to see that path modeling. And again, even at a brand at your size, that you guys are always out there kind of invested in figuring out the process. And that's ultimately really what it's all about, right? That's you're trying to figure out your customers. You're trying to figure out how do we engage with them? How do we create those opportunities to talk to them to some extent? We'll end maybe with that social piece if we can to some extent. And again, not asking you to reveal any of the secret sauce. But as you're thinking of that, as you guys were trying to figure out how do we utilize this great partnership that we have, how did that process go about? How did you guys decide, well, let's bring in somebody else from the outside? And what was that process?
Yeah, I mean, it started with going to the customers, understanding them. The younger generation, so not me, is, they rely on their social network, and whether it's friends or peers or just people that they respect. So it's like, okay, that makes sense. How can we, one, find somebody that people will listen to, our customer listen to, and in what way can we do it? Because getting someone to talk about insurance isn't going to get one excited. So we looked at two areas. So kind of those travel bloggers and handymen things, and kind of, you know, wove some of our stories into their regular posts. So one of the ones we did was, someone was just about to set off on a road trip, and it's like, hey, thanks Farmers Insurance for the tips on how to keep my house safe while I'm away. So those kind of things. So it's, you know, and we're still working our way into to whether insurance and social influence kind of go together, and how can you make it work. But that's kind of the process we went through. We went through a whole selection process as to, you know,
how did you like that? How did you like the selection process of looking through agencies, and especially since you've got two that have been such almost concrete into that? Did you like it? Was it painful? Did you have people that pitched that you were just like, I can't believe we even invited these people to the meeting?
No, all of the above. It's you kind of see the wide range, but you really want some, when an agency comes in, to really understand who you are, how you operate, and you know. We're not going to be, in Beyonce's Twitter feed talking about insurance. Come in with some major.
Bay's not talking insurance.
Maybe that's.
You never know, right? But yeah.
Go Jay-Z instead. But no, I mean, to come in with actually understanding the company and understanding what problem we're trying to solve versus the, hey, here's the show and tell that I'm going to give every single customer.
So that's a good point. And again, while we appreciate all the marketers that listen to this show, we know some agencies listen to it as well, and so. I'll kind of wrap with that to some extent, Scott, which is if you get an opportunity and you're invited to pitch, do the work, right? And not just the good work that maybe you do as an agency, but make sure you understand also what's compelling from that brand's perspective. If you get in the room, you need to make sure that, you know, that you talk to that to some extent as well, not just a show and tell, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, make it personal. I can tell you today, I got 15 emails from vendors I've never known with some canned email giving me the permission to actually meet with them in the next week.
Yeah, aren't you so lucky?
Yeah, lucky me. And it's like, no, you need to show me.
Find some value.
Something, yes.
Yep, create some value. Well, listen, thank you for the time, Scott. We loved having you on this episode of the CMO Suite. If you want to find out more about Scott, just stalk him on LinkedIn, as I did. Do not send him a canned email. Do not send him that, right? I promise you.
Please don't.
Listen, Holly, thank you so much for joining us on this episode as well.
Of course.
And listen, as I said, if you want to find out more about Scott, you can find him on LinkedIn. You can also check out his profile page and this episode page on thecmosuite.com. And Scott, how was this for you?
It was great. Thanks for having me. And it's a beautiful location.
It is a beautiful location. We want to thank again Observatory for allowing us to be part of the show. And thank you for listening to the CMO Suite. Take us out.
For hanging out in the CMO Suite. The podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
This episode of the CMO Suite is brought to you by Connectivity Strategies, specializing in micro-targeted full funnel media strategy for clients like WWE, Corona, First Watch, Coke, and more. Connectivity Strategy, national strength, localized approach. Visit them at connectivitystrategy.com.